Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
How's everyone out there doing? Enjoying the con?
We're doing an interview, people. Have a seat.
So everyone, we're here now with Mark McKenna and Bob McLeod. How are you guys doing?
Very good.
Great.
Great. You enjoying the con so far?
Sure. Yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Basic question we usually like kind of start with. We'll start with Bob. So how did you initially get into comics, and is it something you've always wanted to do?
It was not something I always wanted to do. I wanted to be an artist for Disney or have my own newspaper comic strip. I was not a big comic book fan. I would read Superman. My sister would buy Archie, and we'd swap. But I missed that whole Marvel revolution of Spider-Man coming in and the Fantastic Four and all that. I was reading Mad Magazine.
Okay.
Wanted to be a humor artist of some sort. And a friend of mine, I was working at a grocery store stocking shelves, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, you got to work for Marvel Comics. You got to be a comic book artist." Okay, I'll give that a shot. You know, it's kind of a starting point. And got rejected again and again and again.
Why don't we give the audience a taste of the reason why we're interviewing you guys. You created
The New Mutants. I'm co-creator of The New Mutants, a younger team of X-Men. It's a spinoff of the X-Men back in the 1980s.
And Sunspot, or is that?
Sunspot.
Sunspot was
one
of yours?
Of them. Danny Moonstar.
Cannonball.
Sam Guthrie was Cannonball.
Yep.
Wolfsbane, Rain Sinclair.
So a lot of characters that a lot of people have heard of and have read and liked.
And actually, there's going to be a movie, a major motion picture, in a couple years of The New Mutants in production right now.
Okay, cool. And you?
What was the question?
Well,
who you are and why people should listen to you?
You don't have to listen to me. You could read me. That would be fine.
Very good.
Been doing this probably a little less than Bob has. I'm 32 years in the business now. Started at Marvel on staff back in 1985. Worked under John Romita Sr., was my boss. He was the art director. And my first job actually was, believe it or not, at DC, even though I started at Marvel. Marvel always thought of me as a production guy, and it was DC that gave me my first job. I did Dr. Fate in 1987.
Nice.
With Sean McManus and Mark DeMattis. So it was DeMattis, McManus, McKennis. No. And I stayed on I was on contract at DC for 4 years. Did Dr. Fate. I did Legion 89 and 90. I did Doom Patrol. And I did a book called The Griffin. And then when I was on Doom Patrol, Ralph Macchio, who's an editor, not the Karate Kid guy, the guy who was editing Doctor Strange, wanted to bring some of the Doom Patrol kind of love back to the character. So I jumped ship and went back to Marvel after 4 years under contract at DC. And I did Doctor Strange back in 91 with Roy Thomas. And it was Butch Geis, and then he had left the book, and then I worked with somebody else. And I stayed at Marvel there right through the early 90s. And I did about 16 issues on The Punisher. I worked on Doctor Strange. I worked on Iron Man for almost a year. I had a pretty good run for a while.
So, was comics something you always wanted to do, though?
I wanted to be a filmmaker, actually. When I went to see the guidance counselor as a high school senior, the guy says, "You know, you don't have 13th grade now. You know, what are you going to do?" I said, "The only things I really would want to do would be either make films or be a comic book artist." I actually went to School of Visual Arts in 1989, and they put me in the animation program. They figured it's a little bit of film, a little bit of cartooning. And that's when everything was hand-drawn, so it was about 770 drawings per minute. And somewhere around 250 drawings, I lost my stuff.
All right, so then you were more set for comic books.
Yeah, I went back, and Will Eisner, you know, who did this, created the Spirit back in the 40s, would you say? 40s? Yeah. Yeah, he was my my first teacher that I looked up to, you know, and he was a better doer than he was a teacher. I loved the man, but I got away from the comic book business a little bit, and I went into illustration, and I eventually met Sal Almendola, who was the new talent coordinator at DC Comics, who used to take me in, and I had took classes in DC for a few months, and then went over to Marvel.
Cool. And so so you worked on Doctor Strange for a while. I'm going to ask you, did you see the movie, and what did you think of it?
Loved it.
Do you think they captured the spirit of the original book?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were thinking about the Ditko stuff, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You know, it was more surreal of the Marvel movies as far as the buildings folding over and stuff like that. I think they did a really nice job with it.
And I guess you're excited for the New Mutants movie.
I'm very excited to see what they're going to do with it. I hear it's going to be a little bit of a horror approach to it.
Okay.
With the Demon Bear saga and more of a teen movie approach instead of just special effects superheroes fighting. You know,
okay.
It's going to be more of a probably relationships and then the horror aspect could be really interesting.
Does that fall under Fox then, not Marvel?
Yeah, that's Fox.
Okay. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Right.
Is that because of the X-Men tie-in?
Yeah, it's tied into the X-Men. Yeah.
And Deadpool?
I don't think Deadpool is going to be tied to it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not yet, anyway.
It is Fox, though, right?
So. It's a trilogy, supposedly. So
oh, okay.
If they end up making three movies out of it, maybe he'll get into one there. Yep.
Are they asking you to consult at all on the movie? Or?
Oh, I'm totally involved. Yeah, no.
No, you'll get a credit that goes by at the end, though, right?
Very quickly. There goes my name.
Yeah. Well, look at the bright side. I mean, if the movie doesn't go anywhere, they'll reboot it very soon after, and, you know,
Yeah. You'll
get residuals for a while.
Yeah, it'd be nice. No, I'm just very excited that they're actually doing a movie. When we created the characters, we never thought they'd be making a movie of the New Mutants. That was, you know, way out there.
Right, right. Cool. So, what are you working on now?
I'm fairly retired from comics now. I do occasional covers for Marvel, but mostly I just do commissions for fans. I don't really look for work in the business anymore. I don't turn down work. As a freelance artist, you never want to turn down work.
Right, right.
But I just don't go looking for it. So sometimes they'll email me. Did a Spider-Man job, a little backup job last year for Marvel.
Oh, okay.
But I'm basically just doing commissions for fans these days.
Okay. Was that something on the big crossover they did?
It was a thing of the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
I did a story with the six-armed Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was it fun recreating
horrible.
That?
Oh. Okay. I got to pose every one of those arms, every one of those hands.
Right, right.
A lot of working out arms and legs and fingers.
I'm sure you aced it, though.
Well, not up to me to say, but it was not an easy job to draw, I didn't think.
Was that Ditko when they did that originally in the book?
Gil Kane,
that might have been after Ditko, yeah.
Okay.
The original six-armed Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I think that was Gil Kane and Romita, maybe.
Oh, was that much later? Okay.
Issue 100, Amazing Spider-Man 100?
I didn't read all 6 million copies of Spider-Man, so I'm not sure.
I used to read them in the back of my parents' station wagon at the drive-in movie theater.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Cool. And how about you? What are you working on
so,
right now?
So, Bob and I, you know, we've been doing this a long, long time. Probably have 65 years of business, you know, in the business. But they're looking for guys that are less expensive than we are sometimes. And, you know, now because it's worldwide now. It's not just, you know, you live in the States. Because of the digital age, changed the whole playing field, and they can get guys a lot more, I want to say affordable, but maybe cheaper than us. The other part of it is Marvel had asked me to reduce my rate after 27 years. They asked me if I would take a reduction in rate, which didn't sit well with me, but I said, what if I say no? They said, you probably won't be working for us, which is a strange thing to do. So I'm doing more of my own things, too, now. I do a book called Combat Jacks, which is a sci-fi book I do. It's kind of a throwback to the old rubber-suited 1950s horror movies. And I do a children's book called Banana Tail, which is I did when my daughter was 4 and my son was newborn. Now they're 25 and 21 years old. And I have 4 books out now, but I'm working on a 5th one.
So, and you're writing and drawing them?
I write them both, yeah. I do draw a little bit, but I'd rather work over some guy who does good layouts because the blank page always baffled me. So if somebody gives me layouts or breakdowns, then I can take it to the next level.
Right, okay. So you mentioned 65 years of experience here, and I'm sure you guys...
More than that. I've been in it almost 45 years.
Let's call it 75 years.
Okay, 75 years of experience here. And I'm sure you guys, at every con, someone comes to your table with a portfolio. What kind of advice do you give to young artists who want to get into the business?
I had one today come up and show me his portfolio, actually. I try to encourage them. I mean, they're always looking for new artists. It's not like it's a closed shop and you can't get in. They're looking for the next big guy. So I try to be encouraging, but I'm also very honest with my criticism. You know, I don't pull punches. I tell them what they need to work on and what they're doing wrong, but I also point out what they're doing well. I just try to be as honest as I can.
Right.
The honesty thing is what they really need. You know, your biggest fan is your mom and dad, right? And they love everything you do, but it's not going to help you get a job. So, I mean, it's smart of them to come to guys like Bob and I who've been doing this for 75, 90 years now, you know, and come to us and pick our brain. And I don't know if Bob got this, but when you're getting critiqued when you're a young person, it's very easy to put your tail between your legs and never want to do it again, you know. And there's editors like that, too, that would beat you down, that if you didn't have any self-esteem, you would just never get out of it, you know. But you have to give them a little bit of love, you know, while you're, you know, helping them, you know, with the constructive criticism. So it's kind of a fine line with them. You want them to go forward, but you also want to know, you know, with caution, you know. Know that they have to do a lot of things, you know.
Would you, given that your experience with Marvel, right? Because of that, would you suggest that people go more into independent comics now and not try to get into the big two?
It's easier to get started in independent comics, maybe self-publish yourself. Yeah. Marvel and DC, look out in the market and see what's on the shelves and go to conventions and look around to find the new artist. It's really tough to send your work into Marvel or DC because they get so many submissions. I think they might have even shut that down. I don't even know if they accept it anymore. There's too many people that want to work for them. So it's better to get your work out there and let them discover you. But, you know, a lot of the smaller publishers pay as well as Marvel or DC now, so you can make a good living perhaps with a different publisher. You don't have to work for Marvel or DC like you used to. If you wanted to actually make a living at it, there weren't that many places you could go.
Yeah, but nowadays you've got, I mean, you can even publish on Amazon and, you know.
Yeah, and also there's the movies, looking for properties to turn into movies. You never know. You could get lucky. There's graphic novels. You can do a lot of self-publishing, collect them into one volume and get them in Barnes & Noble. So there's opportunities out there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a big fan of the grassroots method. I always tell younger guys, you know, get your stuff done, get it impressed, you know, in print, get behind the table, start building it, you know, sell a couple copies, get a couple more interest. There are guys out there that, Brian Polito from Lady Death and Evil Ernie, you know, I remember his stuff hanging up in a comic shop I used to frequent. And then eventually Marvel took him over, and they let him away. I'm not quite sure if he became a big deal because he took his stuff behind a counter and started to promote it, and then became at one point Spider-Man 400 was, I don't know, sold millions of copies. He was in the Lady Death Volume 1 or 2, issue 1 was his number 2 comic behind Spider-Man 400. I mean, that's a guy who his art was hanging at a comic shop, and, you know, he just saw the bigger picture, you know.
Nice.
So here's a question, because we're at a convention, and a lot of times independent artists will get a table here and display the work, but a lot of times they're just copying a Spider-Man picture or a Batman picture. Do you think it's better for them to promote their own creations, or to, you know, try to appease to the people who want to see the big characters? Is that a loaded question, guys?
That's kind of a tricky question. When you say, is it better for them, you mean, are they more likely to make sales, or is it better for them to advance their career? Or
Advance their career.
I think it's better at a convention for you to do your own thing, to try to get noticed if you're looking to get ahead.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that was the answer I was going to say. Just made sure that Bob got it right first.
Yeah, it's not a black and white issue. It's a very complex issue that would be a long discussion.
Right. Because we have, it's been in the news a lot the last couple of years. We follow the convention circuit with complaints of what they call pirate artists, and now people's just outright stealing art from other artists.
Yeah.
And what's your take on that kind of...
Don't do that.
Okay.
What it does is it homogenizes the playing field. Bob and I have done, thousands of comics between us, mm-hmm. And then you got some guy that's, drawing this stuff because he looked at Bob's stuff or something like that, and then they're selling it, and they, it's, or you go to these, shows, like big flea markets, and some of the people that go don't realize that we've done 1,025 comics between us, Numbers keep going up. They're looking for something that'll fit nice on their bathroom wall, and they don't really care who we are at some point. And that's changed the way things are being thought of, too, now.
Well, okay.
It's nice that comics have taken a bigger part of the popular culture. It used to be a little niche fandom thing, and now it's mass market. Everybody knows who Spider-Man is. It's become a bigger part of the culture, and that's great. But at the same time, it's made an issue where just anybody can come in, get a table in a convention, and sell their drawings, and they're usually not that good. But the audience may not realize that they're not that good because mm-hmm. it's better than they themselves can do, mm-hmm. and so it just kind of makes our work devalues our work in a way. It's like I say, it's a very complex issue.
Well, so part of that is coming up with your own material in order to set yourself aside from everybody else. And you've created a few characters, and you've done a lot of writing. So, how do you come up with your ideas to set yourself aside? I mean, did like the heavens part and the rays?
No, Mark. The way I get my ideas is looking at other artists, just looking at books, comics, movies, TV. Ideas come into your head when you're watching. Whatever, like Spider-Man, you say, a superhero based on an insect, and you start thinking about other insects, or a guy that can leap real far. You think, well, that's interesting, and one thing leads to another if you just think.
So you're watching like an eclipse when you came up with Sunspot, or?
Chris Claremont actually came up with Sunspot, the idea of him, but then we didn't know what to do with him, so I went through some sketches where he was going to get real big like the Hulk when he used his powers, and then we decided, no, we already got a Hulk, we don't need to do that, so he ended up staying small. So you just, think like the Hulk. Well, big, strong guys. There's the Hulk, there's Superman, whoever, and then what can we do different from those characters? So you start thinking of things that might be different. So it's just a... just mainly just sitting there and thinking. You can't help but get ideas if you just think long enough. Now, some of them are going to be bad ideas. Some of them will be good ideas. I never liked the title of the New Mutants. I thought that was a silly title, New Mutants. The original title for the X-Men was supposed to be The Mutants. And then they decided on the X-Men. I forget why. So we thought kind of a throwback to that, The Mutants. but let's make them the New Mutants. Mm-hmm. You know, so I didn't like it, but it seems to work out. So,
so how did you come up with your ideas?
So, you know, what was dear to me when I was doing Combat Jacks was old. You know, it came from Beyond the Stars, or, you know, the Terror from, I don't know, whatever. And yeah, also a huge fan of the old DC, Vault of Horror, Tales of the Crypt books. So I wanted to pay homage to those kind of things. And that's why I came up with this, you know. And it was Halloween time, honestly. And I was looking at TV shows and thinking there was never enough good jack-o'-lantern monsters. I mean, Pumpkinhead is not a pumpkin, you know. He's just a monster. And Charlie Brown, the great pumpkin Charlie Brown, I thought there was some scene with him having imagination with his thing is chasing him around. But for me, it was a pain, it was a homage thing, and kind of a throwback to the, you know, Fantastic Planet. You know, these guys are walking around and popping off their helmets, and hey, it's breathable here, you know. And I came up with that whole concept, and then I made it, well, why is it breathable on this other planet? Because there's pumpkins there, and they create photosynthesis and oxygen, and, you know, it just became this absurd thing. I did it as a one-shot, and then IDW Comics came to me and said, if you do this as a four-issue miniseries, we'll collect it for you. So now I had to think bigger than one issue. I had to think, because you do a monster, and you do a big monster, and then you have to do something bigger than that, and you have to go bigger and bigger. You can't go smaller, because it's like, oh, you did this already, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to go, you always have to think of something more creative. You know, there's nothing like a five-hour drive from New York to Boston with two buddies in a car coming up with ideas. You know, let them go to the zoo and let the pumpkins pop the head off of a gorilla and take over the gorilla, so the pumpkin had a gorilla. So you start thinking outside the box. It gets insane, you know. Then I started thinking about prehistoric, you know, dinosaurs. Why are the dinosaurs extinct? Because of Ice Age? Because of an asteroid? No, because the giant jack-o'-lantern monsters came down in prehistoric age and killed them all. That's why. You know, so these things, these ideas get grandiose. And sure, they're absurd. And I talked to other artists like Kelly Jones, who's, you know, very reputable. He'd say, it's comic books, man. Let it go, you know. Don't hang up on it, you know. Go for it. So that's, you know, how I get my ideas, from homage stuff.
Have you copyrighted Pumpkin Hit Gorilla? Because
don't you dare.
So since you've done self-publishing, you started out that way, is there any gotchas or things that you know now you wish you knew before you got into doing it?
Just because you get your book in Diamond, and Diamond knows me, like they know.
Tell them who Diamond is.
Oh, so Diamond Distribution is the kind of, I guess they're a monopoly, really, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Nobody else distributes comics around the world, I guess, except for Diamond owns has the distribution network for all 50 United States, and I want to say 5 other countries, maybe even 10 or 15 other countries, I'm not even sure. But Diamond usually has to prejudge product to make sure what will go in our catalog. They treat it like it's real estate. If you get in the Diamond catalog, you better be able to produce, you know, and show the goods. I didn't have to go through that process because they knew who I was. That doesn't mean I sold books, though, right? Because that's a 400-page catalog that comes out every month. And after Marvel and DC and Dark Horse, it's just a crapshoot who looks at A to Z, right? Fortunately, I made my company called Banana Tail Press, so I'm in B, so I'm not Z. So I'm in this first third of the book, you know. But still, they wanted me to sell 1,540 copies of my book at $4 a cover, right? That figured out so they can continue the project. I sold under that, you know, and I feel like I let it down a little bit. But it's hard to sell books when you're not Spider-Man. You know, it's a tricky business, you know.
Right.
Yeah. We've talked to a few, like Xenoscope and a few other small-time publishers. Small now, semi, because even Xenoscope's got a TV show now. But yeah, they say a lot of the same thing. Even getting their comic books into some of the comic stores, you know.
Well, it's the story, right, that Diamond puts it in the book, but the shops have to order it.
Correct.
And if people that go to the shop aren't asking for the book, they're not going to order it.
That's the problem, yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, they assume people are going to buy Spider-Man and Batman, but right, if no one heard of Combat Jacks, you know, then no one's going to go into the local shop and ask
on
for it.
On top of the fact that any comic shop has only so much shelf space. Mm-hmm. There's conceivably 300 or 400 books a month that come out. I don't even, maybe more. You only have so much shelf space, you know. You have to have a relationship with that person, or they have to like what you're doing, or they have to know you in order to give you that shelf space, because it's very valuable to them, right? So that's the trick, too. Yeah, it's a tricky business for sure.
So, how do you feel that digital then maybe does that even that out at all?
Go ahead.
So digital, Comixology has 85% of all digital sales, and I have 35 titles on Comixology, and you know mostly Marvel DC stuff. But then I do have Combat Jacks, and my children's book Banana Tail is on there, and I'll get some royalties on those. But the first one's always the best one, and then it's you know dribs and drabs, you know.
Right.
But personally, I'm still a hard copy reader. I can't read digital. I'm sure a third eye is going to pop out in the middle of my head at some point with this, with the monitor. But it's just another avenue to help branch out and get the stuff known, as far as I could tell.
Well, I'm sure if I buy a digital copy, it's not going to look as good on my phone as it is, you know.
Until I could do a 3D.
Yeah, 3D on your phone.
So I know you guys wanted to keep this tight, so we're getting near the end here. One question we usually like to wrap up on is, how do you measure success?
You know, that's probably a personal question. It would vary with each person.
Mm-hmm. That's why we ask it.
My goal when I set out my career was simply to be paid to draw instead of having to dig ditches or something, you know, manual labor.
Right.
I wanted to be able to make a living from my art talent. So it wasn't a very high aspiration, perhaps. I consider myself a success simply because I've been able to make a living my entire career with my artwork. Sometimes we're better than other times. You know, there's ups and downs as a freelance self-employed person, no matter what your job is, probably, an actor or an artist or a musician or whatever. But I would just consider being able to do what you want to do and make a living at it is definitely successful in my book.
How about you, Mark?
Yeah, it is tricky. I mean, 32 years I've been, I guess, successful as a comic book artist, and now I'm starting a new chapter in my life where I'm not doing Marvel or DC work, and I'm kind of using that history to help support my new projects. And it's not really working as quickly as I had hoped it would work. But, you sold 1,000 copies of your book, and there's 1,000 people that are reading it, and it's your own project. So that, there's some sense of, success to that, I guess, or comfortability, you know. But the reality is, you know, it's you got to constantly push that snowball up the hill and hope that somebody's going to help you at some point push it, you know?
Right.
And that's more, I think, what I want to do with my children's book, Banana Tail, because I can totally see that being a Scholastic or a Simon & Schuster book, you know, that could be the next door, the Explorer type of thing at some point, you know? I think you have to imagine big, too. If you don't imagine big, you know, you could create a niche market for yourself. And
right.
Depends on where your head is with that, you know. Do you see yourself as a niche market, or do you see yourself as a big name, you know, deal, you know? So, I'm still trying to figure it out, tell you the truth. You know?
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, life's a journey, right?
Yeah.
And your idea, what your goals are, keep changing throughout your life, too.
When
you're 20, you've got a different idea of where you're going to go than when you're 50 or 60. So, success, you know, is a subjective, maybe.
When you're 50 and 60, you're just thinking about the retirement home, aren't you?
Cool. And is there anything else? Where can people find you guys online? Are you online?
Yeah, I have a website, bobmcleod.com, and I'm on Facebook, Twitter. Everybody's trying to get me on Instagram, but not bothering with that yet.
I just told you this last week, didn't I? You asked me about Instagram. I just said, what about Snapchat? And the other ones I said, I'm one at a time, you know.
Yeah.
You can also find me at bobmcleod.com. No. MarkMcKennaArt.com. You can follow me on Facebook, but I have 5,000 friends, and after that, you're shit out of luck. But I have a queue of about 300 people waiting to be my friend. I always keep one opening for that person I really know versus that person that I never met before.
Yes.
And I am on
a friend of mine asked me if she could get on my Facebook. I said, you got to wait for someone to die off.
I got to be honest with you. You know what I do is I'll put in the first two letters of somebody's name on my search engine to my friends. And if I don't recognize the name, I just boop. I unfriend them and I find somebody who I know or mutual friends. Yeah. It's a little cruel, but none of them are in this room, so I don't worry about it.
Okay, good. All right. Well, oh, and I guess people can find Combat Jacks at that.
CombatJacks.com, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have CombatJacks.com. I own the BananaTail.com, MarkMcKennard.com, BobMcLeod.com. I got them all. You know.
And people should head into the local comic book shop and tell them they want that in there on the shelf.
In fact, Combat Jacks 3 just shipped this week. And Tom Bancroft, who's a Disney animator, was in Fantastic Planet in New York City the other day and took a picture on Instagram and posted it. It's like, I just found my variant cover at Fantastic. Is it Fantastic Planet? What's the one in New York City?
Fantastic Planet.
Yeah. And he took a picture of it. He posted it on Instagram and said, I got my, here's my variant cover I did for Mark McKenna. So Fantastic Planet's like maybe the biggest comic store in New York. And they ordered it, son of a gun, you know?
Nice.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yep.